On the last show of season 12, we talked to Sarah Parmenter about finding the right work-life balance in your business. Season 12 of the Boag World Show is brought to you by Lynda.com, Template Monster, and my sorrow at the end of yet another season. Hello and welcome to the final episode of Season 12 of BoagWorld.com, the podcast for those involved in designing, developing and running websites on a daily basis. My name is Paul Boag. Joining me as always is Marcus. And our last... No, you don't get to say anything, Marcus. I'm never really... Because I want to get the guest involved as soon as possible. But I have to acknowledge that you exist, Marcus. So I'm never quite sure on the timing. And now, Sarah's just sitting there.
Now you're just blathering away, as usual.
I know. And our guest for this final... No, you just ruined it. Hello, Sarah.
Hi. I feel very honoured. I didn't realise it was the last episode.
Well, I tried to get you on ages ago, Sarah, but, you know, some people just don't reply to my emails.
I know. I'm really sorry.
You're far too important for the likes of me these days.
Not at all. I'm just terrible with email.
So what's the best... No, I'm not going to say what's the best way of contacting
carrier
you.
Carrier pigeon. Yes. Yeah.
Fair enough.
Handwritten letter.
Yeah.
Just that would turning up on your doorstep. That's what you like, isn't it?
Yes, please.
Oh, chocolate. That would be good.
Oh, yeah. Communicating via chocolate. I'm sure there must be a way of doing that.
I'm sure someone has done it. I'm sure some very strange person has done it.
There will be an alphabet of chocolates.
That does exist, I think.
Does it? There you go.
Yeah. See?
There's not an idea on the planet that hasn't already been done, manufactured and distributed to the world.
Very true.
It's like I got very excited. I had a little moan on Twitter, as is my wont, about the fact that one of the disadvantages of working from home, which is very relevant to the subject we're talking about today, which is work-life balance. One of the disadvantages of working from home is you get through slippers very fast.
Oh, you wear slippers?
See, now this is the reaction that I've got. Like, and then there was this barrage. Yeah, exactly. Then there was this barrage of abuse that I'm some old man with his slippers.
Yes.
So what do you wear at home, you know, when you work from home?
On my feet?
Well, yes, not just generally.
That's a bit of a forward question, don't you think, Paul?
Yeah. We've known each other a long time. I don't.
But in the middle of winter, don't you get really cold feet?
Well, there's this thing in the UK called carpets, and they tend to trap the heat quite well if you have a normal central heating system. But
in my office, I have laminate floor because...
Oh, there you go. Then I can understand.
But the problem is you can't wheel around your office. You have to kind of get up and go and get things if you've got carpet.
Yeah, but it keeps you warm.
Marcus, what do you do, Marcus? I'm interested in your footwear, too.
I wear wellies.
I so hope that's true.
No, Paul, I'm like you. I'm an old man and I wear slippers.
So do you find that you wear the slippers out a lot faster than you used to before you worked at home?
Yes.
There you go. That was my point. So anyway, the long and the short of this, before we got distracted into how old and sad I am for wearing slippers, is that someone has reinvented the slipper.
Really?
Oh, is this the one, they're based in New York, aren't they? The ones with the outside slipper, or are they London?
No, it's London. Yes.
And they've got like the plastic backing on them.
Yeah. And you can take it on and off. So you can kind of, they've got this sole that you can kind of step into if you want to go outside. It's very cool.
I just think it comes under the bracket of things that really shouldn't be invented.
Well, yeah, like alphabet chocolate.
Yeah.
To allow communication with people that don't check their email.
Yeah. that. But do you not think that it's a bit icky, like going out and maybe being on the tube, and then you just because you've got plastic backing on them doesn't mean that it's going to be.
Oh,
like,
no, I wouldn't. No, I'm talking about putting the bins out or something like that.
Oh, you're not talking about, because the way that they have it on the website is like, oh, you just walk around London in your slippers, and then you just take the plastic backing off and walk around your house. I was like, no.
No.
That's not cool.
That would be a bit weird.
Taking the bins out, do you not just run out in your slippers and you just pretend it didn't happen?
Oh, well, yes, you do. But the downside of that is twofold. So I've put a lot of effort.
It's an exciting show today, Paul.
I know.
This is what people want to hear. They want a real-world, down-to-earth advice about work-life balance and working from home. So you've got two problems with this. Problem number one is that when you go outside onto things like gravel and that kind of stuff, then you wear through the soles of your slippers even faster, right? So hence you get through lots of them. But problem number two, and this is an important one, is if it's rained, it then soaks through the bottom of your slippers and you get very wet feet.
Don't most British people just find the nearest pair of trainers and just like put them on like their slippers and do that funny like crab walk thing outside and then run back again? Isn't that normally what people do? What normal people do?
Are you implying I'm not a normal person?
Well, I, you know, never state what you can't imply.
It's not even worth using words to reply to, Paul.
I'm really quite upset. I used to like Sarah.
Wow, that was a nice short show. Thanks, guys. I had really good fun.
So how are you, Sarah? What have you been up to these days? Moving on from slippers.
Yeah, I've been good, thank you. Everything's been nicely... I hate using the word busy because actually it hasn't. I've had some nice downtime and taken some time out to actually learn some new skills, and I've had the salon, of course, in the background, done some speaking, but mainly just I finished a big sort of contract in March this year, and since then I just decided I was going to take some downtime.
Wow, lovely.
That is lovely.
Yeah, it's been very necessary, actually. It wasn't just like, oh, I think I'm just going to bum around and just learn some stuff. It was completely necessary. I was burnt out. I was completely burnt out. And it took me about a month to realise it. So, I just didn't have... I realised that I never had had the learning curve that I had at the beginning of when I was in the industry. Mm. You know how when you're first learning web design and you're like... in everything, all hours of the day, learning things. And then when you're actually in the industry and using those skills, you don't really ever go back and have that same learning curve that you do at any other point. So I started learning Swift.
Oh, great.
It's been really interesting. Found a great online learning resource for Swift. I'm learning Flexbox at the moment. All these sort of little things and SAS. And, you know, I've looked back over SAS and things like that. Haven't learned SAS yet, but I've been looking. All these things that you never get time to learn again or learn from scratch, really. You're sort of learning on the go and you never feel like you've had that learning curve. So it's been nice. Yeah, it's been nice. I've done some other freelance work on the side, but I've been really careful about making sure it's not the type of projects that are going to consume me for 3 months. They're sort of quick 1 week, 2 week, 3 week projects that then I can say, okay, now I've got some time to re-go back and learn this other stuff. So yeah, it's been nice. It's been really nice.
It's so important to have that kind of time, especially when you're a freelancer working by yourself, because I'm discovering this now, that it's very easy for it just to kind of get away from you, isn't it? And
yeah,
you know, you're not to have the time to kind of work on those keeping your skill set up to date and moving forward.
Go on.
No, carry on. What were you going to say?
I was going to say, I think the problem is that, I hate to say it, because I think that actually we undervalue ourselves. I think that actually when you look at all the skills that we actually hold and what we charge out for in our daily rates, they're getting a bargain. I think so. I think the skills that we all now hold as, you know, I don't think the term web designer quite does us all justice anymore, but I think you wrote about that actually the other day, didn't you?
Oh, something I write about all kinds of rubbish.
Yeah. No, but no, I remember you wrote something about how that term, you know, we're trying to fit ourselves in a box of like that term. But I think that we've all got we undervalue ourselves, but I think we've also got greedy, that when we know what our daily rate is and then we've got these projects coming in and we think, oh, I'll just take on another one because that times X equals X. And instead of thinking, actually, we get, well, we should be getting quite well paid for what we do. Therefore, if you say, okay, I've got a paid gig for a week, but then I'm going to take 2 weeks to learn a new skill. Uh-huh. We don't think like that. We're too like, oh, okay, well, I'm just going to keep rolling the projects on one after another because we see pound signs.
Mm.
And I understand why we do, and it's a really hard mindset to get out of, especially if you've come from like a job where you're getting the money put in your bank every, you know, a paid salary type gig. It's even harder. But I think we've got a bit greedy. But actually what we could do with is going up, you know, notching our daily rates up a bit and then taking 2 days a week or, you know, 1 week of every month to say, I get paid really well the rest of the month and that week I need for learning.
Yeah.
Otherwise I can't keep up. And I think that's, you know, a huge cause of a lot of anxiety in this industry at the moment, is it runs at such a fast pace, but we don't give ourselves time to learn anything.
Mm. Mm. And also, go on, Marcus.
So I don't think it's necessarily just our industry. A friend of mine who works in marketing and advertising, he came up with this quote the other day. I can't remember who originally said it, but he said the three most addictive things in life are carbohydrates, heroin, and having a salary. And I've never thought of it like that, but we're all addicted to this, having this figure at, you know, fixed figure at the end of every month, and breaking away from that is a really, really hard thing to do. I've never managed to do it.
It is. I only realised because I was working for an American company over the last year where I was salaried, although it wasn't technically because I wasn't an American citizen. So it was a set sort of fixed rate freelancey type thing. But because it was over a year, it felt like a salary.
Yeah.
And then coming out the other side of that, it was like, oh, I've forgotten what it feels like to have other work in the pipes, you know, doing the work, having other work in the pipeline, and then everything, having all those balls in the air, suddenly felt really, really alien again. And actually, the company was a really bad fit for me, really bad fit. But I stayed because it was that, oh, well, I don't have to worry at the end of the month. It's, you know, this is fairly easy. I just do my work and then the money gets put in my bank account. And actually I stayed for probably from October until March. I actually left or tried to quit the company in October last year and failed miserably when the boss came and gave me a hug and apologised for some behaviour. and actually I should have left then, but I didn't because of the salary.
Yeah.
Which is bad. That's a really bad mindset to get back in.
And of course, that's the other thing with it as well, is that you, you know, when you should be taking breaks, either for learning or for personal reasons, you know, so you don't burn yourself out, like you said you did to yourself, it's very hard to turn away that work because you're always going, well, what if it's not like that in 6 months' time? You know, I need to get this money behind me. So there's always that kind of fear element as well, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, with the job I was doing in America, I knew that I was being sensible and saying, okay, that while this lasts, like make hay while the sun shines, that whole saying, while it was lasting, fantastic. But I was putting away so much of it because I knew that I wanted to give myself that buffer of like, okay, after this is done, I want at least a certain amount of, certainly a good few months to learn, downtime, blah, 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 and I don't want to be worrying about money. So it's money's the root of all evil.
it's really interesting because I set up, you know, doing BOAG Works back in January time, about there, and I had in my head, okay, I need a buffer behind me, just like you described, and that's fine. I had a figure in my head that I wanted to reach, and I reached that figure last month. All right, so I've got my buffer behind me now, but it's so hard to now, you know, and I took on everything, you know, for the last 6 months. I've just gone, yes, so I'll do that, and to get this buffer behind me, and now I've got it, I'm still really struggling to stop doing that. You know, yeah. and saying, oh, you know, it's all right if I don't quite hit target next month and I take it a bit easier. So, for example, I had I was due to be going out to California this month, actually. The client wanted to move it back to October for whatever reason. And my instant reaction was, oh, I must fill up that time with other work. And I've only just now gone, well, perhaps I don't need to, really. Perhaps it's all right for, well, yeah, I'm halfway through a year that I haven't taken a holiday. You know, I haven't had a chance to learn anything. Perhaps I ought to have a, you know, a couple of weeks slower. And that's, yeah. It's so hard to get into that mindset, isn't it?
It is. I think because we've just glorified, you go up to anyone at a conference, how have you been? Oh, so busy.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm so busy. Everyone has to say they're busy in order to make it sound like they're, you know, doing so. It's not the done thing to say, actually, I've had some lovely time off, and because it makes you sound like you're not in demand, whereas actually that it's not the case. It's that you're probably picking and in a position, in a nice position, to be able to pick and choose the projects that you work on. Mm. But for some reason, we all go, oh, so busy, so busy, which is not, it's not too clever. But I think we've just got used to, I think we've all got used to sitting in front of a computer and thinking that that equates to work.
Whereas, yes.
Yeah, it's like, I can't remember what book it was that I was reading where they said you need to think of sitting down at your computer as a tool, the same as you know, a carpenter will use a hammer and everything to do their work. Your computer is a tool in the same way as anyone else has tools in their work. And we don't think of it like that because this computer is a portal to so many different things for many people. Mm. It's gaming, it's friendship on Facebook, it's this, it's that. We all sit in front of it thinking, well, if we sat in front of a computer, we must be doing work. And it's not that way at all. Like 80% of the day, you're actually just bumbling around the internet. Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, that was one of the things that I did solve a few years back. There's so many things that I'm still crap at, but that was one where I said, okay, my laptop is my work tool. If I want a game, I go and sit and play on the PlayStation. You know, if I want to be on Twitter or Facebook for personal reasons rather than work, yeah, that's where my iPhone or my iPad is. You know, if I'm going to watch a film, that's on my iPad. But anything, you know, I don't use my laptop for anything other than work. And that's quite a useful way of kind of setting some kind of boundary between work and home.
Yes, that's very restrained of you.
Oh, I'm an amazing person in so many ways.
I wish I could remember who this is. It's not Conran, but there's somebody like that, kind of famous designer of furniture and things.
Right.
Who wears black suits when he's working and white suits when he's not.
It's
that's
amazing.
Somewhat affected, but, you know.
Yeah.
But, wow.
But it's amazing, these little tricks. I mean, someone else I remember, I can't remember who, they worked from home, but they would put on shoes to go to work.
Right. That was Andy Clark.
Oh, was it? Was Andy Clark?
I think so.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, he doesn't anymore because we were discussing slippers.
Oh, okay.
We're back on slippers. Oh, no. So, and then somebody else I knew that used to, you know, go on a commute. So even though he worked from home, every morning he would leave the house, go for a walk and come back. And then at the evening he would, you know, leave the house, go for a walk and come back home. And those little kind of mind games, I think, work quite well, you know, to kind of, you get, the longer you do it, the less of a problem I think that it becomes. But start off, I think those kinds of things are quite healthy.
Mm. I'd love to see that guy walking around the block. I wonder if he talks to himself like, morning, John, how are you again today? I'm good, John. Are you good? Yeah, I'm fine. Good day yesterday. Oh, see you tonight.
What, you mean you don't talk to yourself when you're on your own working?
No, I don't.
I do. I
do.
I talk to myself.
The only time I talk to myself is if I swear because I can't understand something.
Oh, yeah. No, when I say I talk to myself, I don't really talk to myself. I get angry at myself. I shout at myself, which I do quite regularly. Marcus, do you have entire conversations with your imaginary friend?
Morning, Marcus. How are you today, Marcus? Not quite that bad, but yeah, I do talk to myself. Always have done since I was a little boy.
Aww.
And that's, you know, I'm cool with it.
See, now, I always think your home office,
yes,
is quite a difficult one, because yours is one of your bedrooms, isn't it?
Correct, yes.
So it feels very in the middle of the house. Was that a problem when your kids were at home?
Well, when we moved to this house, James would have been 7, so he wasn't like a little tiny baby or anything like that.
Hmm.
And it's not right in the middle. It's the sort of end bedroom out of the way down the little hallway bit. And it's got a door that I can shut. So,
right.
No, not an issue at all.
What about you, Sarah? Where you work, is that... do you get tempted into the rest of the house, if that makes sense?
Yeah, but I'm in an old, like, townhouse, so it's very narrow. So
right.
The office is right at the back, away from most of the other living areas. So it sort of overlooks the garden. And before, in my old house, it was in the room right next door. And that was really unhealthy, because I'd just kind of do a U-shape each day, in and out, bedroom, office, bedroom. But now it's different. And I worked out that there's 211 paces between my office and the kitchen, which feels like a good walk to get.
You must have you live in a mansion.
No, it's just very narrow and long.
Do you take very little steps as well? Is that what's going
yeah,
on?
Yeah, I do it like a tiny pigeon. it works much better, and it's nice and quiet actually at the back as well. So I've just set up like a recording studio, like for YouTube videos and stuff in there, and it's really nice. It works really nicely.
Oh, are you doing YouTube videos too? It's the trendy thing to do.
Yeah, I just decided before I came out to the States, I just decided that actually I wanted to do a video bloggy type thing about business stuff, because it was really bothering me that I couldn't go onto YouTube and find other women in business who I could sort of just subscribe to and see what they were up to every week.
Cool.
And they were talking about business. Either you go on YouTube and it's women talking about how to do their hair and makeup, or clothes that they've bought during shopping and holding it up to the camera. And it is literally a terrible stereotype, and I couldn't find anyone that I would kind of like to subscribe to and say, oh, okay, they've got business, what are they doing on a week-to-week basis? Because I realised that I've learned an awful lot in the last couple of years just by having a business completely outside of this industry. And,
yeah.
And I learn a lot on a weekly basis that really I should be sharing, and I haven't blogged because... You know, it sort of comes, you sort of think about it. Oh, I should blog about having to fire people. That's not very nice, but maybe that would help other people. And then, you know, you're on to the next thing before you've even had a chance to document it. So, yeah, I've been doing that.
Brilliant. So. Oh, that's really good. So is that up and running?
No, it's not. I'm still editing some stuff because I'm still getting used to actually... having a radio mic on and not bashing it with my hand every time I gesture and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So I'm still getting used to it, but I've got some sort of editing to do with it. And there's part of me that's like, am I just unleashing the floodgates to troll hell?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely. No question.
Just never, ever look at any of the comments that are on YouTube. It's as simple as that. You can actually go in and turn them off, I think.
Yeah, but I think sometimes that it creates a healthy discussion. And to be honest, I'm so used to all of that nonsense now that it just feels like, you know, I've got used to it, and whatever someone's going to say, they're going to say it anyway, so might as well just do it anyway.
God, I've got so much respect for you over that kind of stuff, because I'm crap. I turn into a big blubbering idiot the minute anybody criticizes me, so how you manage to do it is beyond me. But let's not get into that, because we always get into that.
Yeah,
what I did want to talk to you about, because you just mentioned it, is the blush bar, right?
Yeah,
talking of work-life balance and kind of, that was a really clever, interesting decision to set up a blush bar. First of all, because we have a lot of male listeners, can you explain what a blush bar is to us idiot men?
Yeah, so it's a blow-dry bar where you go and women get their hair styled, and, you know, we'd actually do cuts and colours now as well.
Oh,
so it's more of a... it was out of, you know, we built up such a rapport with people because people were coming in to us 3 or 4 times a week to have their hair styled.
What?
So I know.
What?
lots of income in Leoncy, apparently. Yeah, and we built up more of a rapport than they had with their traditional hairdressers. So then we got to a stage where we had a core group of people who were saying, you know, can we come to you and have our other hairstyle services done? So it just sort of grew organically, really, which was really nice. Yeah, so it's just, so, it's a traditional hair salon really now.
How? How do you go from being a web designer? I mean, obviously you have hair, so you have experience in kind
unlike
of hair.
Unlike you, Paul.
Exactly.
Unlike you, yeah.
So, you, but, you know, I have feet. It doesn't mean I'm going to start selling shoes. You know, what happened there? How did that come about?
I think I had a nasty bump on the head, and then I no. I was just interested because it had always been something when I was just getting into this industry, when I was about 19, I saved up £100 to go and see this lady called Saha Hashimi, who started the first Coffee Republic in the UK, and which then went on to be bought by Costa.
Okay.
And I was really interested in American concepts, so people who were well-travelled and able to go to America and see what they were doing first, and then they brought them over to the English market and tweaked them to be slightly more British or for, you know. And I was always kind of interested in that. She inspired me when I was about 19, and I read her book, and it was just really interesting. But she came from a long line of money. She had a house in Kensington, and it was quite easy for her because they just remortgaged the house in Kensington and started essentially Starbucks. So I'd always sort of kept an eye on the vacant buildings that were around locally, and this building came up, and I was thinking, that is a good price point. It was £1,200 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And it was in a really good spot in town, and I just ended up contacting the landlord, who had actually already promised it to a tattoo parlour. And unbeknown to me, the landlord was actually a hairdresser himself. And when I explained, actually, I think it should be this, and, you know, this was the concept, he loved it, and he kind of took it off of the tattoo parlour and gave it to me instead. But I chose that because at the time I was thinking, I really want something that it sounds awful, but there's not a whole lot of science behind it. There's skill, but it's not science. It's not it wasn't colouring. It was just styling hair. And in my silly, naive brain at the time, it was, what's the worst that can happen? We're drying wet hair. If it goes wrong, you re-wet the hair and you start again. But I was more interested in putting all the skills from our industry into something so abstract, like the hair industry, and seeing what happened. It was just like the giant UX experiment, really.
Great idea. But, you know, I'm thinking of me in my position, you know, as a freelancer doing, you know, not dissimilar to what... I mean, did you not just kind of go, oh, yeah, I fancy doubling my stress levels. That's what I want to do.
I didn't think of it like that at the time because I was more interested in the fact that I hadn't actually done design work that was so unashamedly female for a long, long time. So I was just, I had nice pink colour palettes out and nice sort of pastel tones, and I was just like a moth to a light.
So basically you created an entire business just to facilitate some design trip you wanted to go on.
Yeah, basically. That was exactly it. And then when I had employees, I was like, oh, yeah, that's in. Yeah, okay, this is what has to happen now. Now all the design is over. Yeah, it was just to see from a UX perspective, if you put in really good technology into a business that's known to be quite stagnant and quite clicky and quite this and that, what would happen if you take all the skills as a web designer and you're able to put in really great systems for online booking and did a custom Stripe module so that we could actually hold credit card details, so if people didn't turn up we could still charge them, which was unheard of in the industry. And it's just been a big experiment, really.
And an enjoyable one? Are you glad you did it?
I am really glad I did it. I'm really, really happy I did it. I'm actually selling it now.
Oh, are you? Because one of the things that I was going to ask is, you know, you've just spent a year effectively working for another company full time.
Yes.
It must be a lot of there must be a lot of work involved in doing the blush bar too.
Yeah, I think the thing I underestimated was, and maybe I was a bit naive with it as well, was I am so used to being surrounded by people from our industry, which is a wonderful thing. But our industry is very, very well disciplined. We take things on off our own backs. We don't necessarily need to be told our schedules. Yeah. We do our work. We're very conscientious about other people's money and time and all of this stuff. And I expected, I approached my employees a bit differently to how they were used to working in the salon industry. And I kind of said to them, here's the umbrella upon which I hope that you will work under. These are the parameters of, you know, don't do this, don't do that. But aside from that, as long as you get your work done, we're not going to be breathing down your necks. We wanted a linear management structure, and we didn't want someone to be, you know, a senior stylist and then someone else is a junior stylist. I wanted to abolish that and just have people who I thought were the best at their jobs.
Yeah.
And that does not work in that industry.
Ah.
It is so steeped in so much tradition that having a linear hierarchy causes pandemonium amongst them. They do not know what to do, and they don't work off their own backs. And actually, it's a very strange industry, the salon industry, in that the salon actually never has any of the power. The employee always does. It doesn't matter which way you try and structure the inside of it, whether they're on commission or they're salaried, like my lot were, they find a way round to make it that everything's to their benefit and nothing is to the salon's benefit.
Ah.
So it's been a very interesting experiment. And
so now you're now you're ready to get rid of it.
yeah.
Fair enough.
I'm ready to kind of move on from, because I realised the day-to-day stuff, the having to, I only ever seemed to get involved with it when it was something horrible that needed doing, like someone needed to be fired, or, you know, there was too much stock had been ordered and we needed to speak to a supplier or something like that. And that's not why I got into it.
No.
That wasn't the point. The point was to build something with all the skills that I had from our industry and see how it went. And I'd love to do it for another industry now. I'd love to take the money that I'll be coming out of it up from what I put in, which is a good thing.
That's good.
And I'd like to do it for another industry. I'd kind of like to do this. You know how people flip houses? They take old houses and then
do them
up. I'd kind of love to do that for businesses, just as an experiment. So in like 20 years' time, I have all this random knowledge about very, very strange industries, but applying everything that we know as web designers to these industries and documenting them. So I'd kind of like to just move on now. I'll be handing it over to another hairdresser who has another two salons herself.
Okay.
And yeah,
good.
Upwards and onwards to the next thing.
Oh, that sounds really exciting.
And
I love that. I love that idea of flipping businesses. I think that sounds like great fun. I'm nowhere near disciplined enough to do it, but, you know, it's nice for other people.
Right. Yeah, it's been interesting.
Yeah. Sorry, we that's all of that, 30 minutes now, that's the introduction done.
I did wonder if you'd just forgotten about the sponsors.
No, I haven't. It's okay, because we've talked, it's all been about work-life balance, we haven't gone necessarily down the questions route. But we ought to pause just a minute for me to do one of our sponsors, and then we'll come back and look at some of the questions that people have sent in from there. But let's talk about Template Monster. Last episode that Template Monster are supporting us this season. I'm sure they'll be back in the future, and a huge thanks to them for supporting the entire season from beginning to end. Both them and Lynda.com have supported the whole season, which is brilliant. They've provided all the kind of cool questions that we've had. They've paid for the transcription, all kinds of good stuff. Now, we've been talking about Monstroid last couple of weeks, which is their kind of mega WordPressy templatey thing, and actually I've posted a video about it this week, so we'll put a link in the show notes through to that. And really, the video and the blog post that I did was about the challenges faced by those of you who work in the lower end of the market, and about how tough things are at the moment with, it's always been a very kind of price competitive part of the marketplace, but now you're up against things like Squarespace and the Grid, and the Grid is just witchcraft, you know, it's just weird. And so, yeah, I did this kind of blog post and video about the kind of challenges you face. And I can't help but think Monstroid is quite a good solution to web designers at that end of the market, because it kind of helps you keep your prices down. It helps you deliver really fast, which is brilliant. So essentially, it's a WordPress theme, but kind of on steroids. You could build absolutely anything with it. And you can also, and this is really important to stress, you can turn features on and off of it, right? Which means that if you don't want, you know, because it offers so much and does so much. But if you're not using a particular piece of function, just turn it off. And that means that you can keep your performance really high on the site. It'll download fast, all of that kind of stuff. You can implement it really quickly, which is great for your profit margins. And it's got a really cool visual editor built into it that allows clients to essentially build pages in the same kind of drag and drop way you see in Squarespace. So it really is very competitive from that point of view. They've also got excellent technical support. Template Monster have got really good support behind them anyway. And they've got an extra good support for Monstroid that will respond within 2 to 4 hours. You've got all the PSDs that you need as well for further customization. There's a really fast install wizard to get up and running. And you get a lifetime's worth of updates, which isn't bad. I always wonder what the lifetime is. Is it your lifetime, or is it the lifetime of Template Monster? Or the lifetime of Monstroid? Or is it the lifetime of the universe? Who knows? But you can find out more about that at boagworld.com/Monstroid, MONSTROID. So there you go. Thank you very much, Template Monster, for supporting us for the whole season. You're awesome. Right. So should we actually talk about some of the kind of questions that people sent in around work-life balance?
Yeah, we've kind of covered quite a lot of these already.
Have we?
Well, the first one we have.
Right, how do we keep hours under control when I'm struggling to make ends meet? How have we answered that?
Well, not quite. We've talked about how do we keep hours under control, but not necessarily if you're struggling to make ends meet.
Ooh, that's a difficult one, isn't it?
It is. Mm.
Sarah, in your early days, before you were internet famous and flying around the world and speaking at Event Apart and people were falling at your feet in adoration...
Oh, yeah, that happens.
Before all that happened...
Gosh.
Did you struggle with, kind of... Because I guess it basically boils down to rates, doesn't it? If you could charge more, then you can work less hours. Was that a big deal for you early on?
Yeah, it was. I was struggling because I was always the type of person who would... say, oh, the project, I'm going to charge you £1,500 for this project, and then ultimately forget to log how many hours I was actually working on the project, and a month later, and night and day for a month, and I would bill and think, I don't think I've done that quite right. So I was really bad because I enjoyed what I did. That's the problem, is when you enjoy what you do, you're not necessarily being completely conscientious about when you're younger, at least, about what you were billing out. But I remember just not being very good at that part at all. But in terms of struggling, I probably didn't have that problem because I was still at home. I was living with my mum and dad, and they weren't asking me for rent or anything like that. So I was very lucky that I got to kind of just experiment with what my rates should be. I remember at one point it was £20 an hour.
Whoa!
That was the first couple of years, and I was like, I think I should put this up. I think I'm building full websites, and I think I should put this up. But I just used to work all hours of the day because I enjoyed what I did. So I'm probably not the best person to ask that one, because I just did it all horribly. But then you get to a point where we're lucky that this industry is fairly candid about a lot of the time, a lot of people are quite candid about how much they are on per day or rates, and there's always discussions about it on blog posts. So you're able to sort of balance yourself where you think you sit in the industry based on your experience. So nowadays, I don't think it's much of a problem. But I remember back in 2002, 2003, when I was coming up with my daily rate, I think I just plucked it out of the sky based on, I know I want to spend X amount at Topshop every week. I might want to go out at the weekend. That's £50. Yeah, okay, that'll be my daily rate. You know, actually, I didn't even have a daily rate. I did it by hour.
Right. Yeah.
It was actually when I switched to daily rates. That's when everything changed for me. When I was doing hourly rates, I was even worse because I'd spend like 6 hours and go, how much of those 6 hours was I actually working? Probably only an hour. So I'll bill for £20.
Yeah.
You know, and that was terrible.
So there's a couple of things in there. One is to track your time.
Yes.
Because you often undercharge for things.
Yes.
Second thing there you said is switch from hourly to daily rate. And again, yes. I think that's good advice. I'm trying to think what else to keep your hours under control when you're struggling. So it's basically what you're aiming to do. You've got to increase your rates, haven't you? That's the only way of keeping those hours under control. So, I mean, I imagine you're on, you know, you're charging considerably more than £20 a day now, day, an hour now.
I'm up to 26 now.
That's good. So, how did you go about doing that? You know, did you just kind of suddenly rank it up one day, or what was your approach?
I didn't do the Andy Clark thing of double Fridays or whatever it was that he did for years.
Yeah, but no, anything that Andy Clark does doesn't apply to the rest of the world.
No, I didn't do that. I think I just pitched, I think someone put out a table based on, you know, if your experience is this, maybe you should be within these hour daily rates. And I think I did just, I remember one daily rate being like £125, and then I remember jumping it to £250 in 1 year. And I think there was some advice in a very early .NET magazine that I read where they said, if you've got work stacked up and you're booked for like 6 months in advance and you're still getting inquiries for work, then you can afford to hike your daily rates up because you've got a stream of people who are going to be willing to pay it. Because if they're contacting you and not really even asking you what your daily rate is, then you're in a good position. And I think it was after reading that I thought, I'm very lucky in that I get so many inquiries that actually I should just try and hike it up and see what happens. And I remember emailing back the first person and being like, it's this, and then wincing, waiting for the reply. And they're like, okay, yeah, that's fine. And it just happened like that gradually over, I mean, it's been 12 years now. So yeah, it was, just a gradual thing, but I think we're just lucky that lots of people document it nowadays, so you can get a feeling for where you sit much better.
And I do think there is that kind of element where you just have to chance your luck a bit.
You know,
that's what it comes down to. See if you can get away with it with new clients. You know, you can, and then, you know, once you've raised your rates for new clients, then you can go back to existing ones. And you're really right, that thing, because I'm having to learn this, you know, it's really weird. I feel like I'm starting again in my career in some ways. Because, you know, we've had Jonathan Stark on the show this season. I chatting with him a lot, and I was going on about, oh, you know, it's really good. I'm booked up to pretty much Christmas. And he's saying, you need to raise your rates then.
Yeah.
Because if you book that far ahead, then you can raise your rates. And he's entirely right about that.
Yeah, absolutely. That's exactly it.
So, yes, hopefully that helps those that are struggling. The other thing I would say is don't overestimate how many hours you're going to be able to charge out. You're not going to be able to charge out anywhere near as much as you think you are.
No, I charge 6 for every working day. I have in my contract that means 6 hours of working, because I know that there's going to be 2 hours of every day where it's email or going back and forth with a new project. So I just state, no one's ever challenged me on it.
No.
In the terms and conditions sheet, I just always say a day rate is based on 6 working hours.
Hmm.
And that works fine for me.
Yeah. I mean, I have a day rate based on 8 hours, but my rate is... presumes that, you know, it allows me to effectively only bill out about half time. So okay. I'm even worse than you. I'm even lazier than you. I work on the assumption, really, you know, I'm such a slacker. By the time I get up and, you know, anyway. Second question. What else we got? Everybody says you should work smarter and not longer. How?
True. It's easy, though. I think that's an easy one.
Go on, then.
Because when I was starting Blush Bar, I was doing a project and starting Blush Bar at the same time. And it was amazing that before the project, I would spend all day on the project, 9 to 5. And then when I had Blush Bar, because I wanted to work on Blush Bar in the afternoon, I'd get my project done, my client work done between 9 and 12. And then I'd spend from 12 to 5 on Blush Bar.
Yeah.
And that whole thing of you make a task stretch the amount of time that you have to do it in is absolutely true. So it's just about putting good measurements in place to say, actually, I am going to give myself between 9 and 12 to get this project done. And 9 times out of 10, you can do it. As long as it's not a new skill that you're having to learn or something like that, where you do need to give yourself a bit longer. If you're just in production mode, you can get it done.
Yeah.
If you just zone out everything and really know how you work best, whether you work best at a coffee shop or at home with your headphones on or however it is, you can get it done. You don't need to be sat there for like 14 hours doing one task.
Do you know what? I said that I'd had that client move this month. So suddenly I had all this kind of free time for this month. And my instant reaction was, I'll take some time off near the end of the month. And then I thought, oh, I know what will happen. This task will just spread and spread and spread. You know, the other stuff I've got to do will spread out and I won't take time off. So what I did is I took the time off first.
Yeah.
And basically squeezed and squeezed until I had loads and loads to do for the remainder of the month. And now I'm just ploughing through it at a rate of knots.
There you go.
Same principle, isn't it?
Yep, same principle.
Other things I think that make a huge difference is, you know, don't have your email client open the whole time.
Yes.
You know, the amount of time that you can waste just, ping, check what that is, it's a bit of junk mail. You know, ping, some client wanting something that could wait till tomorrow.
Yeah.
All of that. So, I tend to only open my email client, I don't know, 3 times a day, maybe, something like that. And that makes a huge difference. And just be, you know, organised. It doesn't, you could do a whole show on this.
Yeah.
Marcus is very quiet at this point because he's not organised. You're bored. You don't like being organised, do you?
No, I don't. No, I'm organised in a different way. No, I have a different job. I have a job where I have to keep my finger on many, many different things. And, you know, not having my email open all the time would be ridiculous. People contact me and that's my main kind of form of communication.
How's that any different to me and Sarah? We've got to manage our own clients and leads and
that's
stuff
true.
Like that.
Yeah, but you have other things as well. You have to go and well, I suppose I do as well. I don't know. Yeah, I'm wrong. Hey.
Wow. I have waited how many years for you to say that?
Occasionally, what I find...
Hang on a minute. For a minute? Marcus is wrong. Okay, carry on.
No, but I'm not. Because, I don't know what I'm saying. I do what you're saying. If I have a particularly tough task, one that I don't really, you know, the kind of task that you keep avoiding, then I will start turning things off. And I'll say, right, this is the only thing that I'm going to have open, which is usually some kind of document writer.
Yeah.
Or I've got to do research into Google Analytics, and I never like doing that, or something like that, then I will start turning things off. But generally speaking, I don't.
That's called the eat that frog principle, isn't it?
The what?
Is it?
It's called the eat that frog principle,
Never heard this.
I read the book years ago. It's based on if you do the task that you are most dreading first, all the other tasks seem easy by comparison, so you plough through them at a much quicker rate than if you'd done it in reverse.
Mm.
Ah,
yeah, well, I always did my homework on Sunday evenings, well, often on Monday mornings.
Oh, did you? So, I was the Friday night kid.
I hate you then. It's just that we are who we are. We can't change that. And, you know, yes, I would love to get rid of the most difficult task first, but nah.
That's a very defeatist attitude, Marcus. You could be a Friday night kid if you only buckled down.
Friday nights are for having fun, not doing homework.
Yeah, but then you don't have to worry the whole weekend. That's how I used to be.
I'm quite good at not worrying.
Oh, okay.
That's Marcus's. That's Marcus's both his curse and his blessing. He doesn't worry about things.
That's an amazing thing, though.
Oh, I know. I wish I was like him from that point of view.
Me too.
But the result is he leaves everything to the last minute.
Not always, but yeah.
Yes, you do.
I'm more likely to leave things till the last minute because I don't fret about things so much. I do fret about some things, but yeah, getting homework done wasn't one of them.
Mind you, I am a last minute Larry as well in certain things. I do really strange things. Like if I know that I have to book a flight for AEA or something like that, I'll leave it until the night before. Or sometimes the day of.
Right, well...
Even though I know it's coming, I've known all year that it's coming, and I'm like, oh yeah, I need to make a flight.
Well, I'm completely different on that. I would have that booked the day I knew it was confirmed.
No.
Yes.
Oh no, I'm not like that. So, I leave all stuff like that to the last minute.
There you go.
You get a better deal, actually, if truth be told.
Ooh, yeah, that I could believe that.
Yeah,
see, because I've always thought that the more in advance you book it, the more likely you're going to get a lower price.
No,
because they're trying to fill up.
But there won't be any seats left.
That's the danger.
Well, yeah, where are you flying to? Timbuktu? There's like 8 flights a day to America. You can always get
true.
There.
Yeah. Okay, yeah, well, it anyway. Was more the logic that was that I would actually be saving my money because I always thought flights got more expensive the closer to the date you got.
It's a lie. It's a lie.
And Sarah would know as she spends half her life in the air, from what I can gather.
I do. Yeah. Bus in the sky.
Let's skip over some questions. Should we work from home, keep working home separate? So how covered that? I don't feel I can go away on holiday because clients won't be able to reach me. Help.
Oh, this one is... I spent years thinking this, and then I just got to a point where I was like, do you know what? No client normally ever needs anything in the 2 weeks that you're away that can't wait.
Yeah.
Like, I remember being held hostage in my office once by a client who wouldn't actually let me go until I'd done something on his website, and I was due to go to the airport. And then I came back thinking, oh my goodness, everything's going to have, you know, got out there and the phone wasn't, like, I was up by my side the whole time, and then got back thinking, oh, everything's going to have imploded and I'm not going to have a business anymore. And the client had done nothing with it for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Like, they just don't, nothing is that urgent, ever.
Yes.
Unless you're running servers. That was the only time when it was stressful, is if you're running, like, you know, their website goes down or their email's gone down, that's different, but... Generally speaking, what are they really going to do in 2 weeks?
What she said. That yeah, absolutely. And as for servers and stuff like that, I wrote in a recent article, drop sysadmin work as fast as possible. It's the devil's work.
Oh, it is. It is the, yeah, it will increase your stress levels as a freelancer by like 80% if you're running stuff like that. Because you end up being the go-to, I can't get an email to send to my aunt.
Yeah.
How do I? And you just don't, you're not that person.
No.
Like that was never our jobs.
No, do not do it.
No.
Skip that one. People say we should keep work and home separate, but work is my hobby. Now, this goes back to what you were saying earlier about that you used to really, you really enjoy your job. So things began to expand and, you know, you wouldn't worry so much. Do you think, because a lot of people in this industry would say, oh, I don't mind working long hours because, you know, it's my hobby and I love doing it. Do you, in hindsight, do you think that's a problem?
No, because I still think it's my hobby.
Okay.
Even now, I still think I enjoy certain parts of this industry so much that I would happily, like, I hardly watch any television anymore. I'm always doing tutorials. And some people might say, oh, that's a workaholic or something like that. Actually, it's not. It's the same as someone who enjoys reading books or any other form of knowledge gathering or bettering yourself or anything that's like, I don't know. This is part of why I wanted to do this video blog podcasty thing, is it's almost become unfashionable to actually want to do something with your brain nowadays. do you know what I mean? It's like it's become unfashionable to want to be clever or want to have some knowledge in something. And I don't think that it's a problem at all if that's what you enjoy. It's the same as other people having other hobbies where I'm sure they've got their heads in books or something like that. I think I was talking with Brad Frost at an event apart actually a couple of days ago about this, and we were all saying about the mindless stuff that we do to combat, you know, sometimes the industry can be very heavy on your brain when you're learning new things. And it's funny how many gamers there are, how we're all still on computers but just switched the use case to like mindless gaming. And he was saying that Worms has just come back apparently in new
Oh, I liked Worms.
He was saying that that's like the best web designer mindless checkout for a couple of hours is to play Worms, and I kind of love that. I think that that's fine as well. I don't think that it's a problem. I really don't.
Do you think it could... I worry that it could become a problem if we're not honest with ourselves. That's my problem, is that I think sometimes we go, oh, yeah, we love what we do, we love the job we do, but actually there's a difference between, yeah, I love to learn, I love to fiddle, and I love to play with new technology and new gadgets and that kind of stuff, but I don't love sitting up till 3 a.m. trying to solve an IE8 bug because,
oh no,
you know. So you've got to be, you know, I still like to have my work time and my home time, but that doesn't mean that my home time I won't be doing some elements of work that I enjoy, but I give myself permission to not do the bits I don't enjoy, if that makes sense.
I have a 6 o'clock rule now.
Do you really?
Yes.
And how's that work for you?
Pretty good, actually. Obviously, you can't. I mean, if you're driving back late from somewhere, then there's nothing you can do about it. But since the kids grew up and left, I've found myself getting up earlier and earlier. And if I have anything that I really kind of really need to get my head down on that, I'll just get up really early and do it. So, therefore, I'm not prepared to stay up working in the evening.
But do you think, I mean, no, and I don't mean this, you could take this as offensive, and it's not meant
that way. It's going to be, isn't it, Paul?
It's really not. But, you know, for you, the web and digital and this kind of, it's a job.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Correct.
You're not, you wouldn't be like me and Sarah, you wouldn't, you know, if you weren't getting paid, you wouldn't be sitting fiddling with Swift or you know, learning new bits of tech. So it's maybe slightly different in your situation.
Yeah, definitely. We've had this conversation, you know, if you didn't have to do this, would you do it? Probably not. I don't know. That's quite tricky, actually, because there are aspects of it I really like, and it's more the kind of running a team and seeing a team doing good work and getting on well, and all that aspect I really like. I'd like to be this sort of like, boss that just flits in and out every now and then. At the moment it's nothing like that, obviously, because I've got lots of other work I need to do. But you're absolutely right. It isn't my first love, so from that point of view,
I do think something you said there is actually spot on in terms of being able to tell. You know, if it's 8 o'clock in the evening and you're sitting, you know, if you are enthusiastic about the web and digital and things like that, and you are still working at 8 o'clock in the evening doing whatever, if you ask yourself, if I wasn't getting paid to sit here and do this, would I be doing it? And the answer is, well, no, because it's, you know, writing some documentation or doing me accounts or whatever, then you shouldn't be doing it at that point in the day. Do you see?
Yeah.
That's probably quite a good way of looking at it.
Yeah, definitely.
Anyway, we ought to wrap up because we're going to run over, as is always the case. Let's do our last sponsor, because I want to thank Linda for the amazing stuff that they have done to support the show over the last however many episodes, 15 I think we're on there. Yes. They've sponsored us through the whole season. They've got a great selection of on-demand video courses for business, creativity, technical skills. They're a great place to learn new skills, whether it be learning Swift, for example, as Sarah is doing, or whether it's learning some aspect of web design, Flexbox, or running your business or anything else. They've got a great selection of here. And of course, it's only right that in the very last episode of the season, they have come up with a bumper crop of related content that, you know, there have been some weeks where they haven't done so well, But this week they've done really well. They've got loads of stuff, whole courses dedicated to finding your work-life fit or creating an amazing life. They do a course on creating an amazing life. There is a course that I should say.
Cool.
You are going to be disappointed with that, aren't you?
It's setting about the bar very high. Yeah. If by the end of that course I don't have a house in the Maldives, then it's let me down, I'm afraid. But they've got videos on balancing entrepreneurship and life, balancing the technology in your life, developing a work-life balance, achieving a work-life balance, and so it goes on and on. So there's loads of content on work-life balance there that you can keep watching. And so there's loads for you to check out in this. We've got a bit of a break now between seasons, and people on Twitter are wailing and gnashing their teeth going,
really?
How am I going to survive between these two seasons of Boag World? Lynda.com. There is your answer. You can get a 10-day free trial at lynda.com/Boag World. Marcus. Last one. Is it going to be a good one?
Well, this is a joke from a chap called Paul Winter, who says, P.S. I have listened to every Boag World podcast. Do I get a medal?
I think. Yeah, we can make him a Knight of Boag World. We've done that once before, haven't we, with Andy Kinsley, was it?
Yeah.
Lasky is also one.
Yes, a Boag World Knight.
There you go.
You are now.
Sounds good.
You don't get anything for it. It's totally worthless. But
I was going to say, if you listen to every episode, you probably need some kind of counselling.
Psychiatric help.
But anyway, right, his joke. An old lady was driving along the motorway at 20 miles an hour whilst knitting. After she failed to respond to the flashing blue lights and siren, a police car pulled alongside with the window down. Pointing at the woman, the policeman shouted, "Pull over!" And she said, "No, it's a scarf."
Oh, that is awful. That is just... He obviously has listened to every single episode, if that's what he's coming up with.
He obviously found that joke and thought of me. Which is quite kind of nice, isn't it? I'm a part of his life. Yeah. In a very, very small way.
Which is fair enough. So, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us on the last episode. As
yes,
always,
you.
Amazing.
Thank you for having me.
We need to meet up.
Yes, I haven't seen you since Vegas, I don't think.
Oh, that's... Listen to you. You've been... Oh, yeah, when I was flying across to Event Apart. Oh, I was hanging out with Brad Frost talking about this. Oh, when we last time we saw was in Vegas.
You were there too.
Yeah. Damn. That undermines it, doesn't it? Damn.
That was a fun time. That was the fart conference, remember?
I forgot.
That was fun.
Yeah, Sarah had flatulence problems in her workshop room.
Yes. It was caused by the drains in Vegas, but I didn't know whether to say something because I didn't know whether it was a problem with an attendee or whether I had to get someone from the conference in the end because it was that bad.
Only in Sarah's world do these things happen.
I tell you, I'm struck with some kind of web designer's curse of some sort.
I don't think it's anything to do with web design.
I think it is.
I blame it on the blush bar. There we go. Let's go with that. All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Sarah. I hope people have enjoyed this season. We're all done. We're back on the 24th of September. When we're going to be doing a season on user experience design. We're going to look at user experience in the broadest possible sense. So we're not just talking about web design. We're not even just talking about screen-based design. We're going to look at all aspects of user experience. So expect a really good, interesting season. I'm going to, there's some good guests I want to get on. Not that this season hasn't had good guests.
Careful. Well, dig that hole a little bit deeper, Paul.
I was obviously going to invite Sarah back to talk about iOS development.
Obviously.
So there.
Do you need a bigger spade? Or do you just want to wrap up?
I think we'll finish the season at this point.
You are.
Bye. Bye. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.